Cheerscast is part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Woody, here are your tickets.
Tickets?
Oh, right.
Tickets? Tickets?
Company season tickets. Patriots, Dolphins tonight, 2 on the 40-yard line.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Oh, thanks, Miss Howe. You know, you are the greatest boss I ever had. I mean, you're the prettiest boss I ever had. I mean, thanks.
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me once again after a bit of a hiatus is returning guest, Blaine Dowler. Welcome back, Blaine.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I think the last time we recorded together, you were just about to become a father. How's that going?
It's going pretty well. We've got a 2-year-old who can recognize the Gorn captain from Star Trek. Okay. She is working on giving Live Long and Prosper with her own hand signals without intervention.
Fantastic.
She's not quite there yet. She still has to take the pointer finger of one hand and shove it between the two middle fingers of the other, but she's getting there.
Good. All right. Those are the important things. Those are the developmental milestones that we work on.
Yep.
We are here for Cheers Season 7, Episode 5, Those Lips, Those Ice. And that was not me mispronouncing the word eyes. That's how it's written. This one is written by Peter Casey and David Lee, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, November 24th, 1988. Was that Thanksgiving that year, probably?
Not in Canada.
Okay, yeah. Carla's husband, Eddie LeBec, is back in Boston, and with him comes the newest addition to the Traveling Ice Show, a sexy East German figure skater named Franzi Schrempf. Cliff warns Carla that Franzi has a reputation for sleeping with the men she works with, and soon Carla's excitement at Eddie's presence turns to suspicion and hostility. When Carla hears a tabloid gossip item that Franzi is dating someone in the ice show, she physically attacks Eddie and accuses him of cheating on her. Sam and the rest of the Cheers gang try to settle Carla down, pointing out that her difficult treatment of Eddie might have led him straight into Franzi's arms, and if she wants to keep him happy, she'll have to act more alluring and subservient. When Eddie has his friends over to the house for poker, Carla does her best Stepford Wife impression until Sam reveals the truth that Franzi is dating someone else. Carla attacks Eddie again, this time for allowing her to humiliate herself. Eddie correctly points out that he was faithful to her, which Carla didn't know how to process because, well, it's a first for her. Eddie convinces Carla that he loves her for who she is and doesn't want her to change, so she reverts to her default callous and mean settings, sending him to the kitchen to clean up the mess that she made. All right, Blaine, what did you think about this episode?
This is one of those ones that shows why Cheers was consistently high in the ratings. It doesn't have any standout moments, but it's reliable. You can sit down. The decisions that we see the characters making are consistent with the personalities we've seen so far. So you laugh a few times. It may not be one of those ones that leaves that lasting impression. If you ask people to make a list of their top 10 Cheers episodes, it's probably not on many of them. But I doubt there's many Cheers fans who intensely dislike it either. It's just one of those stable, reliable episodes where you turn in, you get a laugh, and you're ready for next week.
Yeah, pretty much. Carla-centric episodes, some of them were fantastic and amongst the greatest the show ever did, but a lot of Carla episodes, I think, kind of fell into the category that you just described. They were consistent, they were funny, they didn't really stand out as much, and I think it's because as great as Carla is, she's fairly one-dimensional in terms of the supporting cast. She kind of only has one mode. A lot of her episodes kind of feel a little bit repetitive. But, you know, this one, I'll mention to the listeners, because this is something that we've sort of been talking about. This is Eddie's second-to-last appearance on the show. Jay Thomas' second-to-last appearance on the show. He gets one more episode later this season. But I think this is the last time we actually see him with the cast. And it's unfortunate, because I do think just Jay Thomas was a great actor in his time, and I think he had great chemistry with Rhea Perlman and the rest of the cast, and I wish things had gone differently and we could have gotten a little bit more of him, because I really think he's funny, but that's the way that goes, so we won't be seeing much more of him. So.
No, I think it could be one of those cases where the writer saw more comedy potential in removing the character than in keeping the character.
Yeah.
Given the way things play out. Because right. You're right, he's not long for the series, but he also, he's not Chuck Cunningham. He doesn't just like go up the stairs and is never heard from again. He's definitely written out.
Yeah. We will see that almost in a Godfather style fashion. We'll get to that next year. The teaser for this episode, this is one of those little one-off teasers that don't really matter, but I love this one so much. Rebecca is going into her office, and she's carrying, you know, like a stack of, like, accounting books and ledgers and stuff like that, and she just kind of shouts back to Woody that she's really busy and she can't be disturbed. And she sits down and she starts working at the desk, and immediately, of course, Woody knocks at the door after she'd asked him not to disturb, because he needs clarification. He's like, do you want me to hold business and personal calls? She's like, yeah. And so he disappears. 2 seconds later, he knocks at the door again. She's like, what is it? He's like, well, what if it's an emergency, something you can handle? And she's like, Woody, I'm putting the bar in your hands. I have confidence in you. And he gives her a little thumbs up, like, yeah, awesome. And then 2 seconds later, he knocks on the door again, and you hear the tension creep, and she's like, yes, she's like saying it through her teeth, and he's like, you know, I really appreciate your vote of confidence. And then 2 seconds later, he knocks at the door again, and she screams, you're driving me crazy, shut up and leave me alone. And Woody just kind of silently backs out of the office, and Rebecca starts to work, and then she thinks about it, and she's like, damn it, and she gets up to apologize, and she goes to the door, and whatever you expect to happen, Woody is out there with his voice pitched so high, crying. He's like a little baby, and it's so funny, because he's like, I'm sorry, Miss Hall, and he just like falls into her arms crying, and it's, you know, we've made a lot about Kirstie Alley's ability to be completely coherent and erudite and like have like perfect enunciation even while she's a blubbering crying mess, and Woody comes pretty close to that too. I think there's enough in his voice where you're like, okay, I know what he's saying, even if it's just so high and whiny that I can't hear it.
Sometimes when you have the focus on one character, like we said, this is a Carla episode, the others don't have much to do, but they make sure it's good, and I think that's what they were doing, right? So Rebecca and Woody didn't have a lot to do in this episode. So Woody's role is pretty much exclusively in this teaser. Rebecca has a little bit. She gives counterpoint to some of the arguments as Carla's deciding what to do with her relationship. And she even fills in some of the barbs that Carla's usually throwing at the other patrons, because Carla's too upset to do that this week. So she's stepping up for that role a bit. But
well, yeah, that's true, yeah. Once we get into the episode proper, Frasier has a new portable phone in his briefcase, setting the time a little bit. He says it's the answer to every busy psychiatrist's prayers, being able to get in touch with his patients. And of course he sits in the case and closes the briefcase, and then it starts ringing, but the joke is that Frasier has forgotten what the combination is to his case. He's like, yeah, I thought it was Lilith's birthday, no, my birthday, no, Freud's birthday, and he's like, Jung's address or something like that, and he keeps going through these different lists, but the phone is like just keeps on ringing, and everybody's getting more and more annoyed, and like saying, like, all right, take this out of here, and he sends him back to either the bathroom or the pool room to answer it. And then we get to we find out the news that the traveling ice show is returning to Boston, and Carla is really excited to have her husband Eddie back in town. And she's like, he misses me, the kids miss him, and not to mention I happen to be at my sexual peak. And Sam, not even really joking, just kind of mentions that you've been there since you were 12. And then, yeah, like, finishing off that little joke from the beginning, Frasier is chased out of the pool room. We just hear the voice of somebody going, answer the damn phone! And he's like, he comes back and he finally remembers that the combo is Jung's address, and he's like, hello? And the joke is like, no, there's no one named Itzhak here. So, what did you think of the whole Frasier with the phone thing?
I did appreciate it, especially, as you said, in the time they were new. If anything, the briefcase seemed a little light, given the battery packs I remember those things having. I mean, I was of the age where I had a grand total of one classmate in high school who had a cell phone, and he had it in his locker hooked up to a car battery because that's what it took.
Was it the size of a telephone or the size of a tennis shoe?
Oh, it was sizable. It filled the whole bottom of his locker. And, you know, that was my grade 12 year. He was in grade 10, and he had it so that his calls couldn't be traced as he was selling drugs out of his locker. I never saw the guy in class.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Nice, nice. So then Rebecca comes out, and a little bit of a continuation off of the teaser. She gives Woody some corporate tickets to the Patriots game. Woody thanks her and says that she's the best boss he's ever had, and Sam is in the frame right behind Woody, and he just goes, you know, taking exception to that, and Woody has to amend his statement to say that she is the prettiest boss he's ever had. So naturally, Sam takes a greater exception to that one, too. And Woody finally just says, thanks, Miss Al. That's all he can say. And we get Norman Cliff fighting over who wants to go to the game with Woody. You know, and Cliff, he's like, you know, I brought you along with what's the last, you know, big event that I went to. And Woody's like, yeah, I sure did appreciate the garage sale.
Yeah, at that point, even Frasier inserts himself as they're coming up with the contests
to
see who's going to win.
He's like, why don't I ever get to be invited to these things? And Norm's like, well, you have to go home to your wife. Frasier's like, what about your wife? And Norm's like, you can't be this dense with your patience. Mm-hmm. I like that line a lot. So then Eddie comes back, and he's going to kiss Carla, but she acts surprisingly shy, and she doesn't want to be affectionate in front of everyone. So she brings him out into the stairwell and closes the window shade. And it's one of those great gags where you just hear everything, and the door starts to shake, and everyone in the bar can hear the moaning and kind of going at it. And we get this little glimpse of a guy walking down the stairs, stopping to see them, and then running back up. Like, just bolting up those stairs again. And for a completely unknown extra who doesn't have any dialogue, and just with a limited window into what he is doing, the physicality in that part is fantastic. That's, like, very close to my home run for the episode, is that guy just kind of walking down, seeing them going at it, and running back up the stairs.
Yeah, it's an uncredited role, because he doesn't have a line to speak. He doesn't need it, but he nails it.
Right, right. And you're like, I wonder, like, to be that expressive in just, like, the physical part, like, I wonder if that was somebody with a dance or theater background, rather than just some unknown, like, just some rando extra guy in the extra union or something. They come back in, you know, just seconds later, and Eddie's like, oh, it's good to be home. And Eddie tells the gang about Franzi Schrempf, this East German figure skater who has joined the ice show. And Sam, of course, the gang has actually heard about her, and Sam is really impressed with how she can bend her leg all the way behind her head, and as he's trying to demonstrate it, he asks Rebecca if she can do that. And, give Ted Danson credit for some of that flexibility at that point in his life. He was able to get his leg pretty high up there.
Yeah, he had it. I think he got his heel up to forehead height. He just didn't quite get it behind his head, but that's still, he got his foot at least twice as far as I can get mine, if not more.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I'd have to break several bones in order to try that one, yeah. But at this point, Cliff tells Carla that Franzi has a reputation for sleeping with the men that she works with, and, you know, Carla better watch out. So Carla is already starting to think about it, and she kind of pulls Eddie to the side, and she asks him, she's like, you know, they say that Franzi changes lovers more often than most people change socks. She's like, I don't have to worry about you in that area, do I? And he's like, no, I just put on a fresh pair this morning. And when Franzi comes in, like, Sam is like, hey, you know, as host, what do you want to do while you're in Boston? And she says she wants to wear blue jeans, see a Tom Cruise movie, and eat a Big Mac. And like, everybody's like, whoa, and Sam is like, wow, this is sexy, dumb, and a cheap date. So, I'm trying to think, what Tom Cruise movie would have been coming out in 1988? Was that a year of Born on the 4th of July?
Could be. I'll dig it up if you want to go to the next part of the synopsis.
Yeah, Days of Thunder, I think, was 1990, but I could have those wrong. So, and then, of course, the gang, like the Norman Cliff and the regulars start, you know, playing their little double entendre game with the East German woman, and they're like, they wouldn't mind some arms talks with Franzi, and Frasier's like, yeah, she could control my arms, and Norm wants a mutual on-site inspection, and one of the guys, Alan, is like asking what kind of payload she can deliver, and then Woody is like, we could reduce missiles in Western Europe, and he's laughing at himself, but everybody else is just like, Woody, that's not how this goes. And he, and Sam has to pull him aside and whisper. He's like, all right, here's what you're missing. So,
and to answer your question of a moment ago, 1988 saw the releases of both Cocktail and Rain Man. Which would have been out there in the middle of November.
Okay, yeah.
Should have thought of Rain Man, because just podcasted about it.
Well, both of those movies, Tom Cruise looked more attractive than he did in Born on the 4th of July, so okay, good choice for Franzi,
Yeah, and Rain Man came out in December, so that wouldn't have been there. Born on the 4th of July was 1989, and Days of Thunder was 90.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So in November, you might have still found Cocktail. That came out July 29th of that year.
Okay.
But in those days, you know, you might have to go to second run, but you could see a Tom Cruise movie.
Yeah, there you go.
As would have been Cocktail.
Cool, very cool. So, you know, Carla overhears Eddie talk about how hot he thinks Franzi is, because you know, he's telling Sam, he's like, if I was a younger man and, you know, more handsome or everything like that, and Carla kind of like sneaks up behind him and he catches her. He's like, I wouldn't have, if I had a brain in my head, I wouldn't have started the sentence. And she's like, so you think she's hot? He's like, well, yeah, if you're into looks, which I'm not, of course, you know, trying to back out and making the situation worse. But Eddie, you know, protests that he's kind of hosting Franzi at Cheers, so he kind of has to be at her beck and call. Meanwhile, Franzi appears completely disinterested in Sam's come-ons, you know, even when he mentions that he drives a Corvette. She's like, yeah, I drive a Porsche.
Yeah, and he offers to race them sometime.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of races, the gang of Norm, Cliff, and Frazier try a game of rock, scissors, paper to see who gets to go to the Patriots game with Woody. And of course they protest that, you know, a paper should not cover rock. That makes no sense. If you threw a rock, it would rip right through that piece of paper. And Norm, perhaps uncharacteristically, decides that the real winner of the competition, the one who should go to the game, is the winner of a foot race to the corner and back. And he's already halfway out the door as he's saying this, and Cliff and Frazier chase him, even though Frazier, you know, says he doesn't have the shoes for that, and he's running this under protest. And then when they come back, actually, like a few seconds later, Norm is under the exertion of the effort to win the race has been so much that he doesn't even want to go to the game. He just wants to sit at the bar, and when Woody kind of drags him along, Norm just kind of collapses on the stairs. Again, a gag with looking at the window on the stairs, because he taps on the window to get somebody in the bar's attention, and says he like motions that he wants a beer out there, and Rebecca's like, we don't do takeout, or we don't serve out takeout. So, that window, getting a lot of action in this episode, I really like it.
It's often just a prop, but here, yeah, they do have two or three gags that are just straight shots through that window.
Mm-hmm,
right? Because we see, you know, not just Norm collapsing there, but, you know, moments later, we get people bringing in the collapsed Frazier,
right,
Carla claims not to recognize, and just say, take him out of here, I've never seen him before.
Yeah, that's good, yeah. Guy's like, does anybody know this guy? Carla's like, never seen him before. Yeah. And, you know, Franzi asks Eddie to take her back to the hotel because she's done there, and he's like, yeah, of course, I'll go with her. And he drives her off, and Carla's just standing there kind of despondent, and Cliff is like, well, don't say I didn't warn you. And Carla throws a beer right in Cliff's face, and it kind of splashes everywhere, and he's left standing there just kind of stunned, stupid, and Frazier's like, well, give her credit, she didn't say it. So, at some point, an indeterminate amount of time later, Sam cannot figure out why Franzi isn't into him, and Frazier suggests that, you know, you got no other choice, you've got to become a communist. And this idea is deeply offensive to Cliff, who rattles off the conservative talking points about why communism was terrible and everything like that. And he's like, you'll be stuck in like a tractor farm and they'll take all your stuff. And but Sam is like, yeah, but the stuff that you had before you became a communist is still your stuff, right? So.
Yes, Sam clearly does not understand communism. It's a running gag where he's going, oh, is there a membership?
Right, right. Carla is distracted. She, you know, she goes up to the bar to give Woody an order, but she can't even remember what it was. And her mind is in the clouds because she suspects that Eddie is sleeping with Phronsie, but she has no evidence. And that's really kind of like the most jarring thing to her. She's like, that was the good thing about Nick. I always knew for sure. And Norm's like, how? And she's like, he told me. So.
Yeah, he would put Polaroids in the family album.
Yes, that's the thing. Of course, Eddie, or Nick Tartelli would do, yeah. So Sam hangs up the phone and he says that Phronsie won't date him because she has fallen for some guy in the ice show. And Carla freaks out about this, like hearing that it must be Eddie. And Rebecca says that Phronsie probably just made that line up to get Sam to leave her alone. And Rebecca thinks, she's like, I'll have to remember that one. But Cliff then reads a gossip item in the newspaper that Phronsie has been seen spoon-feeding spaghetti to a short, dark, melon-faced man in the ice show. And they try to defend it. They're like, well, you know, that doesn't have to be Eddie. That could be anybody in the ice show. And Norm's like, I guess that's why it's not more popular. And Eddie comes in. He's like, come in, colors are like honey bear. He's like, give your lover man a hug. And Carla rushes him screaming and just tackles him to the ground. And credit the blocking and the staging and everything, because she's on top of him and you can't really see his head or the upper half of Eddie in the shot. But she is throwing hands down on that and appears to be punching him in the face. But the staging is such that we can't really see it that much. So it's the eye makes up for it, but it looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's perfectly blocked and right down, so you know, Sam intervenes, pulling her off, asks Eddie, can I borrow Carla for a minute? And then he just, yeah, sure, it'll give me time to find my tooth.
right, yeah. And Jude Thomas says it like with a little bit of a lisp, like, I'll find my tooth, yeah. And Sam tells Carla that she can't murder Eddie. And, he's like, Frasier, tell Eddie one of your funny psychiatry stories and everything like that. And Sam pulls Carla over to the other side of the bar where the guys kind of gang up on her. And they're like, you know, if he was tempted to see another woman, it's like, maybe you bear part of the responsibility for that because of the way you treat him, essentially. And Carla has a good one back at Sam. She's like, okay, what do you recommend, oh God of good relationships? It's like, and this is when, you know, the everybody starts kind of chipping in, and one of the tertiary barflies, a guy named Alan, who's in a lot of episodes, he has like this little mini monologue that she has to show him how she feels with her heart and her soul. She has to open up and you know, be warm to him. And she says, give unto him and he will give unto you. And Norm just shuts him down. He's like, no more for this clown. He's like, you've had enough. So then Sam, you know, tries to convince Carla to be more frilly, I think is the word they use, and appealing and subservient to Eddie to keep him happy and faithful. Rebecca has this line about how, like, he's, you know, being more, this kind of total woman idea of, you know, being like this perfect, like, kind of like, you know, like partner for the husband, putting all of his needs ahead and everything. She's like, this is BS. And Sam's like, well, that must explain all the men breaking down your door. Another moment that might be the home run for the episode. You know, Sam is pitching this to Carla. He's like, you know, the saying that you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. And Woody just pipes in. He's like, maybe I shouldn't be butting in here, but you catch the most with dead squirrels. And I think the audience, the studio audience, had that best reaction to that line. So Carla goes back to Eddie, and Frasier's finishing up a stupid story or joke, anecdote or something like that. And Carla asks Eddie directly if he's cheating on her, and we find out that he's like, no, he wouldn't cheat on her. But he would also, if he was, he would lie to her because she would kill him. And this whole thing, they have this circular dialogue, and he's like, honey, I'm having a headache from this conversation. I'm going to go lie down. So we cut to a return to Carla's house, set that we got in the last few seasons, and we're back here now inside Carla's house and in the kitchen. And he has some friends over for poker, and it's an interesting mix. We get Norm, Cliff, and Frasier, but also some of his hockey buddies, And there's one of his buddies with a line that actually the cast member who plays this guy, he's credited as just Hockey Buddy One, but the actor who plays him is Charles Noland, and he's one of those guys that you've seen him before. He's done like a lot of stuff. Like I think he was a semi-regular in ER for a while. I remember him the most as one of the reporters from the show The West Wing. He was a reporter named Steve. But he's got one of those faces where you see him, you're like, oh, I've seen him in a lot, but he's not like a big guy. He's always just like a minor part, a bit part, or like a one-off or something like that. Did you recognize that guy?
I didn't, but I'm also, you know, looking at his IMDb right now. I haven't watched the West Wing or ER much, but you're right. He was in 43 episodes of the West Wing as Steve and 13 ERs as E. Ray Bozeman. So running through it, I haven't watched it yet. I'm still working through the Rockford Files, but he was in one of the Rockford Files made for TV movie.
Oh, yeah.
He had a role in Wayne's World. He's got a couple episodes of Matlock as like gas station attendant and clerk. He's got a fairly lengthy IMDb credit list, but it's a lot of one episode, two episode, one episode, two episode. It's one of those things where he's in big projects with small parts or small projects with big parts.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Look, while the guys are sitting around playing poker, you know, Carla chimes in from the kitchen that, you know, she's getting everything ready for them, and they're like, why is Carla acting so nice? And he's like, I have no idea how, you know, he's like, I don't even know how a car works either, but I don't mind riding in one. And Fraser's like, oh, shades of Algonquin Round Table here. And then Carla comes in, and she's got like a tray full of, like, with chips and dip and everything like that, and she's getting beer for Eddie, and she's serving all the guys, or serving Eddie in particular, because when Norm asks for a beer, she hits him in the head with a tray. She's like, what do I look like, a waitress? And then there's a knock at the door or the doorbell or something, and Carla goes to answer it, and Sam is there, and he wants to tell, or he went to see Phronsie in her dressing room, of course. It's like, Sam, what are you doing in the dressing room? But when he got there, he saw her other boyfriend, and he's like, talk about melon-faced. So now Carla knows the truth that Eddie isn't cheating on him, and she doesn't have to act like this anymore. She goes back to the poker game, grabs the tablecloth, wrapping up all of their food, all their snacks, all their poker chips, all their money and everything, drags it out, throws it out into the front yard and everything like that in this very demonstrative take. And Norm gets up and stretches, like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm bushed. And they start to file out and everything. And Norm is the first one out the door, and Cliffy stops, like, Norm, let the dog have the dip. That's a bit. So this leads to Eddie and Carla's sort of final confrontation, and she blows up at him, and he insists that he doesn't care about Phronsie. He would never have been without her. He's like, he witnessed her be horrible to a person. He's like, I saw her treat one of the guys like dirt, called him out, embarrassed him, and even spat on him. And Carla's like, why didn't you defend the guy? He's like, I was the guy. So she's like, why did you let me act like this? And he's like, I thought you were pregnant again, and this was your way of telling me. So, and another great line and everything. Because Carla's like, you certainly seemed to like it when you were making all your stupid cracks in front of your friends. And he's like, well, you know the competition to be witty in front of those guys. And they have like a nice little moment where they appreciate that. I like that joke. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, the whole point of this argument is that he has been faithful, and that kind of went under Carla's radar, because she's like, oh yeah, I guess that's never happened to me before. And he doesn't want the perfect wife, a Stepford wife, you know, he wants his wife, the one that he fell in love with, the one who was feisty and rude, and he's like, and occasionally downright nasty. And then she's like, well, if that's the case, get into the kitchen and clean up. So there's a cat box with your name on it. So, yeah. So, yeah, overall, I mean, there's a lot of little funny parts. But, yeah, in the life of the show, it's not going to be one of the more memorable ones. I think, actually, this one had a lot of really funny visual gags. Not necessarily a lot of, like, dialogue or something that really stuck with it. But, yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I think not really memorable might be the best description, because I started my rewatch with the podcast, but I've been watching ahead a little bit. Mm. So, you know, if I'm sitting there working, it's a good background show. I'm just about to start season 10. You reached out and said, hey, are you up for this one? So I rewatched it. And honestly, I did not remember a thing from this episode. And I've watched it in the last couple of years. So mm-hmm. There are some Cheers episodes I haven't seen since they aired 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I can still quote some lines from it that are coming up in seasons 10 and 11. This isn't one of them. But again, it's not off-putting. It's not. It has ups and downs. We can get into that.
Right.
I appreciate the fact that Sam Reck was able to say to Carline, he's one of the few people who could, maybe, right, you could make choices to make your relationship healthier. His advice about how to do that is terrible.
Right.
But the fact that he recognizes, hey, some of this is on you, and, you know, I think he might be the only person on the planet who could say that without getting struck.
Good point, yeah.
So that speaks to their relationship. Alan has that one line, but he's the only one that gives good advice, and they call him out for it. But
right, yeah.
Yeah, you kind of have to accept that this is an 80s sitcom, so some of the plot is going to be based on the fact that nobody communicates. I mean, how much of this could have been solved if Carla spoke to Eddie sooner, or if Eddie made a point of introducing Franzi to Carla, saying, hey, meet my wife when she got to the bar.
Right. Part of that is the nature of just, you know, sitcoms are kind of dependent on poor communication because you need that. That causes the conflict, that causes the drama and the rift and stuff like that. So you need that. But also, yeah, as a product of the times, I mean, there was a certain degree of societal misogyny baked into culture. And that is certainly on full display here, because what is their recommendation to Carla to fix her relationship? It's like, oh, be sexier, be less independent, be more, like, put his needs in front of your own, and, like, not just in front of your own, but sacrifice yours. Act like you have no other needs or wants or you know, independence or you know, your own ambitions or drives or goals and everything. Just, it's all about him. Put him first and foremost. And it's like, okay, in a healthy marriage, you want that to be a two-way street. You know, you want that to go both ways. If it's all about one person, that's not healthy in any way.
So I think actually giving that dialogue to Alan was the writer saying, we understand what the healthy response is, but the healthy response isn't funny.
Right.
So we're just going to hang a lantern on it,
right,
and then sweep it under the rug and have the characters make bad decisions, because that's what our characters do.
Right, and exactly. And yeah, and the way they do it, because they're like, not only are we saying, like, yeah, that advice would not be funny, but it's like, the joke here is that the guys think he must be drunk. He must be too drunk. That's why he came up with the good idea. It's like he's been drinking too much. It's like that. That's just like, that's how, like, ludicrous that suggestion is. So yeah. So the way they handle it, and I think that kind of softens the blow of seeing Rhea Perlman actually, like, dressed like that and behave like that, which is such a jarring switch. It's like, I don't like this, Carla. I don't want the scene to last too long, and thankfully it doesn't really.
No, not as long as it feels like. I mean, there's a bit of a gag when she first walks in wearing this evening gown, right? This off-the-shoulder thing. There's a lengthy scarf, but you know she's not going to survive. I mean, actually reminded me of a conversation I had with a student this week. There's a ninth grader who came to me asking for tips in getting someone to like you. Mm. And my response was basically, if you have to change yourself to appeal to someone, the relationship is doomed.
Right.
Right, just spend time together as yourself. If it's going to work out, it will. Otherwise, it won't.
Right. I skipped over, but the actress who plays Franzi, Issa, it's spelled like Junk, probably pronounced more like Yank or Hunk. Issa Yank. She's credited in the show as Issa Anderson. She's in a lot of German stuff, German movies and TV and stuff like that, in her IMDb page. Trying to think if there were any other notes. As I said, this is the penultimate appearance of Jay Thomas in the show, if I remember correctly, the last actually episode to feature him, he's just on the phone in scenes apart from the rest of the cast. So I think this is the last time we see him on screen with Rhea Perlman.
Yeah, that's how I remember it too.
Yeah. For Norm's tab, he had 3 beers this episode, which takes him up to 608 for the series. Anything else before we get to the superlatives?
like we said, that the main plot is Carlo. There's that subplot of people competing for the tickets that Rebecca was happy to get for Woody. I think the only thing we left out is that, you know, when Cliff hits her up for it, she's going, no, we can't do this. And he's coming up with all the reasonable excuses, like, oh, it's employees only, or you don't want to go to the well too often, oh, it's too much hassle. And
she's like, no.
And he finally says, okay, you just don't want to do it for me? Yep. Okay.
Yeah. You're right. That was the type of thing. Like, I mean, Carlo would have been even more mean about it. But yeah, it was basically just treating him like crap the way Carlo would. Yeah. For the employee of the week, part of this was a sentimental, just because he's not gonna get it again. But I really liked him as a performer and what he brings to the show. I gave the employee of the week to Eddie. It'll be the last time. But yeah, he got it for me. What about you?
For me, it's tight between him and George Wendt.
Norm was my runner-up, too. Actually wrote down runner-up Norm, yeah.
Again, Norm doesn't have a whole lot, but we get, you know, his great barb at Frasier, like, you're not that dense with your patience. Or the physical comedy of running back and forth, which, as you said, seems a little out of style for him, or a characteristic, but again, he gave himself the head start. And then, you know, he's got the physical gag with the beer on the steps, like, I am going to give it to George Wendt there, because, nice. Again, J. Thomas filled the role, but the Eddie LeBeck role is not one that makes you laugh out loud. You get chuckles from Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Norm gets the big laughs.
Yeah. So. Yeah, even again, like that last bit, like for just like when she throws all of the poker stuff out into the lawn and Norm just gets like, he's like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm bushed. He's like, I can take a hint.
Yeah.
And the home run, and this was tough because, you know, again, like the episode, it wasn't as funny, but the actual funny bits I thought were really, really outstanding. And I'm torn between some visual gags. Like the one dialogue bit that I thought was the funniest was when they're like, you can catch more flies with honey than with sugar, or with honey than with vinegar. And what he's saying, I don't know about you guys, but you can catch the most with dead squirrels. Then there was the when Carla physically attacked Eddie, but I think my home run is actually going to be when she pulls him into the little stairwell and starts going out to town on him, and you just see the guy walking down the stairs, stop seeing them, and then running back up. I think that little visual is probably my favorite part.
It was great, and as you said, they're hitting the door hard enough. She's got the blinds down, but the blinds are actually shaking back and forth in a way that's so subtle. I'm not sure it would have picked up on broadcast before we had the cleaned up versions that we have now.
Maybe not.
Yeah, at least it would have been easier to miss.
Mm-hmm.
That was great, but I think I'm going to have to go with the original Frasier phone thing where he's just trying to get this open and, you know, eventually remembers, oh yes, it was Jung's address. Why would you even know Jung's address? But then again, first time I played Marvel Ultimate Alliance, I got all the address trivia questions without looking anything up. So.
Wow. Well, nice.
Yeah.
I do love that, like, when he disappears, you know, down the hall, and we kind of forget about the joke, and then it comes back, and you just hear somebody going, answer the damn phone! That's off-screen yell. That's really...
It's good, but it's... This is one of the episodes where the high points are not as high as they usually are, but the low points, the advice they give Carla, the fact that Alan gives the good advice, again, they're hanging a lantern on the fact that these guys are behind the times. Right. We've talked about the Cheers black hole sucking people in and making them less than they would be. And I think this is just a prime example of them getting pulled down from where they could be.
Yeah, yeah. Good point, yeah. All right. Well, Blaine, anything you want to plug? Any projects, stuff you're working on, aside from raising a new kid?
Well, actually, John Wilson and I just launched a new podcast in January. We're doing Babylon 5 30 years later.
Okay.
So it's going through every episode of Babylon 5. We're doing it 30 years after the original broadcast date in most cases. There was a pilot movie that aired almost a year before the beginning that we slid back, and then it ends with a couple direct-to-video movies that we're going to push up just so we don't have years of gap between them.
Sure.
And we're doing supplementals whenever it's broadcast breaks. We should never go more than 3 weeks between podcasts. But Yeah, we are going through that. It's John's first time through the series, so it's spoiler-free and very friendly for new listeners, people who want to pick it up, because it's streaming for free, and that's on top of the 99 Years, 100 Films I do with Trey Hooks about Academy Award-winning movies, everything that won Best Picture, on a monthly podcast, and then a weekly old-time radio show where at the end of 2023, we ended our run of Duffy's Tavern, which I did specifically because of Cheers.
One
of the creators of that was the father of a Cheers creator, and you can hear a lot of that early Cheers DNA in Duffy's Tavern. So that the early episodes of Duffy's Tavern, we had the bar regulars, and the inciting incident was someone unique walks in off the street, and that was a very big chunk of seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it was. I commented on that back then. Like that was kind of the episode type. Yeah,
it was kind of nice to hear the origins, but I'm also thinking, yeah, it was nice, but that 1940s vaudeville style setup punchline. I'm glad I heard it. I don't know that I'll do another 136 episode run of a radio show in that style again.
Oh yeah. So no more Fibber McGee and Molly shows for you.
No, right now it's Pat Novak for hire.
Okay, very cool. All right, well, Blaine, thank you very much for coming back on Cheers Cast, and thanks to all of you out there who listen to the show and support us by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheers Cast is supported by the Right On Podcast Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of the Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcasts to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
So nothing was going on, and you let me walk around like Debbie Reynolds. Why didn't you stop me?
I thought maybe you were pregnant again, and this was your way of telling me.
Well, you didn't have to like it so much.
Like it? It gives me the creeps.
Well, you certainly seemed to like it when you were making all those stupid cracks in front of your friends.
Well, you know the competition to be witty in front of those guys.